Well, there we go. The time is 13 minutes past one. Thanks for joining us on HFM Stream 96.4. And we've got the young man from down in the Eastern Cape. His name is David Callaghan. This is his third appearance on the show. And, Kellers, how you going, mate? Are you well? Kellers, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
There you go, nice and loud. Great, thanks, fellas. Yep, all good. No, very good, mate. Shocking day up here in Hootspur. I just thought I'd rub it in. It's going to be around about 28. It's about 25 at the moment. So how's it down there? Are you at St. Francis or Port Elizabeth?
I'm actually at work today. We're in St. Francis. Oh, sorry, in Port Elizabeth for the day.
No.
And, all going well. You'll be surprised to hear that there's no wind today, so there's a very gentle breeze of about 25 k's.
25?
I'm only joking. The wind is just a gentle breeze today. It's not warm, but there's a breeze. Yeah.
Oh, good stuff. Well, if we had 25 k's up here in Hootspruit, the town would blow away. They'd panic. We'd have to batten down the hatches. But that, yeah, so all good, mate. Yeah, things are, everything going well in the Eastern Cape and St. Francis, no dramas or riots or anything?
No, nothing at the moment. I think everything is going as planned. Obviously, we all know that the test match was played here on the weekend, so there was great excitement last week. And I think, we all know that when these big events come to the small centres, there's a lot of hype, and I think the Georgia Test match is up in Pumalanga this weekend as well.
Yeah, so, Mombello.
When these things happen, there's a lot of excitement, and there's a big build up for the week, and people getting their kits all done, and there's people wearing box shirts and. And it's just amazing. It's just amazing, and we all saw on the weekend. The stadium was packed. There was a great atmosphere there. The game, it wasn't a bad game of rugby. It was a fairly good game of rugby. So all good on this side. And we all know that when the Boks are winning, and everybody's in a good vibe, and they arrive at work on Monday morning. Everyone's talking about the rugby on the weekend, and all your clients are talking about the rugby. It's been a good week.
Did you crack the nod? Did someone invite you to a box or something?
No, I didn't get there, unfortunately. Being in St. Francis and coming into town 3 days a week, I decided to play golf on Saturday morning.
Oh.
And then we finished just in time for the rugby. Oh. And then, as a normal South African would do, if you're not at rugby, you still have a bra and you still have a few people around, and you enjoy the rugby that way. Yeah,
they're certainly playing well, Kellers, I must say. And I was talking to actually Fires. I gave him a call and see what's happening in the Eastern Cape with all the doom and gloom with these new tariffs coming and how it's going to affect the town, obviously, with cars, tyres, Sundays, River, citrus and all that. So that was a bit of doom and gloom for an hour, chatting to him about that. And that's certainly a bit depressing for a small community like Port Elizabeth.
It's a major concern for everybody. I'm not quite sure what the impact will be on the citrus side. I do understand that they do exports, to America and that type of thing. But I think a lot of our fruit also goes to Europe. So, let's hope that side of the world or that side of the business sector doesn't get affected too much. But the motor industry is a major problem, and there are so many subsidiary companies that are linked to some of the bigger firms. It's even in the small business that my wife and I have got, a lot of the companies have their clothing embroidered and all that with us, and we don't know how it's going to affect them. do all the Goodyear caps, the caps they used to buy for their staff.
Yeah.
And we used to do probably 500 of them a year, you know. So that's just, we're probably going to lose that. Although there's a sales office, we might still do about 100 for the sales people, because I hear there's a sales office is going to stay, but the factory's closing. So, you know, the sales office is there just to do the handle all the imports, you know. So there's obviously still going to be a Goodyear tire available, put it that way.
Are they closing the whole factory? The whole factory is shutting down for good. Is that the word?
That's the story.
Sure.
But they're going to keep a sales team. So obviously they're going to, like anything, I mean, they're going to obviously bring in import tires and that type of thing. And they've got, it's not only the Goodyear brand, they've got a couple other brands that they've been handling or importing anyway. So they'll obviously carry on doing those imports, you know.
Sure.
But I mean, we can see it on, you know, funny enough, you talk about all of this. Yesterday, a mate of mine who's a car salesman from Renault, at Renault, and he's got a brand new Bucky that comes on the market. Don't even ask me the name, but it's a Chinese brand that's coming as well. And I said to him, I can't believe it. You know, you get all the bells and whistles for about, you know, like 500,000, 600,000, whereas the same vehicle in a big brand, a well-known brand like a VW, and those selling for a million, you know.
There's a massive
difference, you know. And funny enough, I just said to the guy, when you and I used to play cricket, there used to be everything used to be Gunnenworth, Schlesinger, Duncan Fernley, Hunts County Bats, all these sort of English names, as if you want to call it that, you know, all those sort of bats.
Mm.
Now you watch TV and you see BDO and Ishan and all these other brands I don't even know of, you know, like they all, everything's coming out of very India and Pakistan now. So, you know, it's the same as the motor industry. Exactly the same thing's happening, you know.
Yeah, it's sad, isn't it? You know, because I was watching this morning, and in America, I mean, their jobs stats come out. And since they've been, I'm not trying to be politically, it is what it is and it's happening. With Trump coming in, he's got all the people he's got a lot of them out of the country, and all of a sudden another 140 or 50,000 jobs are being created overnight. And everyone turned around and said, but it costs a little bit more money to make it in America. He said, that's right. Well, you can soon work out why they're putting a few extra tariffs on, isn't it? Makes them more competitive, obviously. So where we, unfortunately, are going the other way and saying, well, we're prepared to put a 100, 200, I see Mittal up in Johannesburg there with the steel plant also, with the knock-on effect of direct employees, plus, as you were saying, indirect companies that service, you know, them around the edges, that there could be 100 there. And, you know, you start scratching your head and saying, well, why don't we protect ourselves? Why don't we keep our people employed? But it seems to be the other way around here. And also, Kellos, I was looking at Australia, and they've got exactly the same problem. You know, up to 20 years ago, they used to manufacture plenty of cars. But now they don't manufacture one car. They don't manufacture nothing at all. And they're doing the same thing.
I think one of those big Land Cruisers used to be manufactured in Australia, if I remember correctly. It was a magnificent vehicle. Not that I ever drove one. I just know a mate of mine that drove one from Australia. So I think, you know, the whole world is changing. And I mean, we look at the tariffs and that. We could have always said to companies like VW, you know, if VW felt the electricity was too high and all these big major firms were the electricity was too high and all that. I know, we know it's unstable, but you know, you don't mind saying, "Look, I'm prepared to pay 10% for my personal electricity, as long as that we know that money's going to go and assist in the big manufacturing firms to keep people employed." You know what I mean? Because that's what it is. So it doesn't really. So we don't really get hit by taxes as such, but we're happy to pay a little bit more for electricity. But as we know, so much goes missing. I mean, every day we open the paper and there's something, somebody's doing doing something wrong and somebody's taking this. So I generally stay out of the political world, I must be honest. Obviously, the rates thing's quite a big thing in our lives because it might affect our business. And at the same time, I mean, a few months back, I was looking to buy another machine for the business, but I think it's, you know, we probably have to just hang on and consolidate a little bit now and decide, you know, once everything's settled, if we can grow the business or not, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it's a big worry for everybody in this part of the world, but you have to take the good and the bad, and, you know, the rugby was good.
Yeah.
And then obviously followed up with the cricket yesterday, wasn't so good. So,
Well, I was watching that on Crick Info on my phone while I was doing my show yesterday, and you know, if you go back sort of 3, 4, maybe even 5 years ago, IPL, it's sort of, if you got 160, you're in the game. Now this year, if you get 160, you're out the game. So IPL this year, if you didn't sort of get to close to 200, even then you got knocked over. So I was saying yesterday, when, because South Africa won the toss, they decided to bowl again, the same as they did with Zimbabwe the other day. And I thought, well, okay, it's working for you, so do that. You know it, you've got to chase, which I think makes it a little bit easier sometimes. Always hard to know on a wicket what you got to post to win the game. I think it's, we used to find that when we played. Do you remember in the Eastern Province days on St. George's, because it was so small the ground, you either got a 2 or a 1. You didn't get 3s.
That's right.
Yeah. No. So it was always hard batting first, because you never knew what was a good total, you know, and we used to set a lot of 180s, 200s, and I used to hate that, because to bowl with that made it really difficult, and thank goodness we had you, Philip and Mark as boundary riders, which just save us probably 30 runs a game in the field, and I don't think that's an exaggeration. You guys used to save plenty for us, you know, which kept us in the game. Besides your ability to bat, all you guys were fantastic. But I thought yesterday, 170, yeah, I thought, you know what, if we get a decent start, that should be a doddle. And when they were about, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think they were 111 for 4 or something with about 9.5 overs to go. And I thought, nah, they'll get that. You know, you only need 60-odd off 9. Do you think I was unfair in that assessment?
No, I think your assessment is good. I think the one thing I do want to bring in here, and I think... you know, if we compare, and it's just my observation.
Yeah.
If you take, for instance, the IPL, and you take when you take playing for your country, there's a massive difference.
No, of course.
There's a lot. I think, personally, I've never played in the IPL, but I can imagine it, because I feel like that when I'm watching it now. Mm. It's just another cricket game.
Yeah.
It's another T20 game.
Yeah.
But when I'm watching South Africa or a national team playing, they just, I think there's a little bit more pressure.
No.
So, you know, we can take 20 runs off maybe because of the pressure, the situation of the game.
Yep.
Those guys are not going to, there's a chance you might get dropped, or there's somebody in the wings maybe take a position. So you're going to be a little bit more conservative when it comes to your approach to batting, especially. So in IPL, you know, if you, 3 or 4 of those guys that are playing, those international players that are playing, there's very little chance that they're going to get dropped. So what they do is they just throw caution to the wind and they just go for it, you know.
Yeah.
So there's that element that we have to worry about. And then obviously yesterday's game was as we said, that, I mean, we had them really in trouble at one stage, and then can you believe it? Another South African, Bevan Jacobs, comes in. I know, I'm joking. I know that he moved there when he was 3. But anyway, he comes to the wicket and he got them up to 170. Was it 173?
Yeah,
if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
For 5. And yeah, I think that is competitive. I think on that wicket, on that pitch, as you said, in St. George's, was in our day was be a little bit smaller.
Yeah,
I think that if the times that I've played at Rari, it's quite a big field.
Yeah,
it's got and on top of that, the wicket's been used quite a lot recently for the different matches on that because they've had a couple of matches in in the last month or so. So I think that wicket was a little bit slow on the slow end. And then the one thing about New Zealand, they're very clever. They've got those two spinners, Santor. I think it's Santor and Shodi. Ishan Shodi.
Yeah.
And they bowled. They bowled really, really well.
Yeah.
And they tied us up a little bit. And the only comment I've got on our batting, which is always sometimes they put Muthuswamy, I think it is, they put him up above Rossi van der Dussen.
I saw that. Yeah.
And he wasted 9 balls. For about 8 runs. Where, as we know, you must get your best batters in to bat as quick as possible, especially when you're chasing a total of that of you know that sort of mid-table total. You know, if you're chasing a 120 or something like that, or a 130, and you send the guy in to have a hack and that's fine. But if I think when you get to 170 or to 200 in that bracket, then you need to send your established batters in, because they're the ones that are going to want to use one or two balls to get in, and then obviously tee off towards the end. And we put pressure on Brevis and van der Dussen, and I think that was maybe a slight error there. So, and obviously George Linder, who's actually become a very, very good all-rounder with the ball and with the bat, and a very good fielder as well. So he's a really good T20 player.
Yeah, I was watching it, and I really thought, oh, they're going to win this. They're going to win it, not comfortably. It's going to go to the wire, but only requiring, 60 runs off 9 overs. You're thinking, and you're 4 down, you'd think, well, there's no stress. You're actually just knocking it around the park. You pick up your odd boundary, and pick up your 2s and 1s, and you actually coast. You're probably only chasing half a dozen in the last over. So, yeah, listen, I never played T20. Did you play T20 at all, Dave, before I came on? No. So,
the only T20 I played was the T20s that we played together. I think it was those Super Sport Challenge games, and we all thought they were hit and giggle.
Yeah. That's right.
I don't know if you remember. I think we played one in Durban. And we played one up at Wanderers when all the teams played on one day. I think it was in the morning there was a game starting at 9 until 12, and then from 2 until 5, and then from 6 until 9 that evening. I don't know if you recorded. I think Clive Rice had a lot to do with the first one.
It was the Yellow Pages benefit game for Clive Rice, and all the sides went up, and it was Skins. You remember it was Skins?
Skins, yeah.
And didn't we skin them, Callis? Yeah, we skinned them in the end. We were way too clever for them. Don't worry about that. Did we talk about that? I suppose I can talk about it now. I suppose they can only put me in jail once. I haven't been in yet. But
no, I don't think it's good to talk about that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, but you know, okay, I won't talk about it. I'll probably get locked up. But that was an amazing game because I was made captain of that game. Remember, Kepler wanted nothing to do with it. He said, "You and Peter Rawson sorted out. We were playing Natal." Remember?
Yeah,
and then
all I can say is on air that we lost every skin until the last game where we get the very last skin, and that was it the first two I think it was the most runs in the first 5 overs or something, or the first 10 overs or something, and we had a manipulated skin.
Well, all I'll say that come out of it, right, and I'm being a bit unfair to myself, I'm not a very good captain in the first 5 overs, and I was bowling as well, so yeah. But it was amazing, and I'll tell this bit. When I had to go and do what I had to do in Durban on the plane and then fly back the same day, the first guy in the line to put his hand out was Kepler Vessels. Amazing. He wanted nothing to do with it. He couldn't wait to get in the line and get a bit of cash. So that was a funny story. But anyway, they thought they were too clever for us, Callis. We sorted them out. Don't worry about that.
No, we sorted them out.
We did.
It always reminds me.
God,
reminds me.
God.
That game reminds me of a game a Legends team or a Veterans team. And I would say it was probably like they're playing at the moment. There's a group of guys that have gone over. I see AB's making a bit of a comeback, and Umla and all these guys are playing, and they're playing in England at the moment in what they call there's a Legends tournament, and they're all in their sort of they're in their 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
Not 50s, I'd say late 30s and 40s. And they're all playing over. Anyway, we went on a tour. And I'd never ever been to the West Indies as such. So eventually I got this call up, and it was a great team of guys. It was Pat Simcox and Adrian Caper, myself, Dale Bekenstein. Claude Henderson,
yeah.
Lance Klusner, John Cummins, Dale Bekenstein, I think I mentioned. Anyway, we went over to play in this, Peter Stratum, Merrick Pringle, Merrick didn't make it. When he got to the airport, his fingerprint couldn't be picked up. We left without him. Okay. He said he'll come later. So what he tried to do is he tried to go through Schiphol instead of going through. Because he had to get a transit visa to get through the UK.
Yeah.
So he decided that he would go through Schiphol. So he ended up in Schiphol, and then it still wouldn't pick up his fingerprint, he couldn't get a visa or something. So anyway, he never made it. So we always one short of a player. But kind of long story short, we really did well, and we go into the second last day. We play in a semi-final against England, and they had Graham Hick and Devon Malcolm and Darren Goff, and
yeah.
I mean they had a really good side. All these guys were sort of still playing what they call minor counties cricket or club cricket. You know the English, they carry on playing forever.
Yeah.
And we hammered them, okay. So they were a little bit like Tatson Small came to Pat Simcox, who was our manager at that stage, and said to Pat, listen, for tomorrow's final, what do you want to do? There's $50,000 for the winner.
Yeah.
What do you want to do? So Pat said, what do you mean, what do you want to do? He said, no, well, what I'm saying is we're going to play it hard, but, let's rather split the money,
Yeah.
Everyone gets a little bit extra,
That's it, yeah.
So, Pat, because obviously they were worried that we actually played so well in the semi-final against them and beat them.
Mm.
So they came to us, But unbeknown to them, John Cummins went on a back foot defensive shot and dislocated his finger because he hadn't picked up a bat for a couple of weeks, or a couple of years. Peter Stratum bowled a ball and pulled his intercostal muscle on the left-hand side.
Gosh.
We had Merrick Pringle stuck in the airport in wherever it was.
Holland, okay. Yeah, Dutch. Yeah.
So we were down to 9 players, really, at that stage. So I remember Pat says to the Gladstone Small, I'll give you an answer later in the bar.
Yeah.
So we go back to our hotel. We're sitting in the bar, and I'm sitting with Pat. And Gladstone Small comes up and says, "Pat, have you?" And he said, "No, I'll give you an answer at breakfast time." So everybody's going. Everybody's sitting there going, "Pat, take the money. We're never going to win. We've only got 9 oaks.
Yeah.
Take it." He says, "No." He says, "I'm going to drag them for as long as possible." Anyway, eventually at breakfast the next day, we're sitting there having breakfast. The guy who gets the small comes and sits with us and has breakfast. He says, okay, someone, tell us now, are you going to take it or not? No. I'll tell you at the ground. We haven't been able to get the whole team together.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got to the ground and we're all there now, getting ready to go and do a bit of a warm-up and stuff like that. He goes across to Gladstone Small and says, listen, we'll take the offer. Anyway, when we went onto the field, we were so, the guys were so tired from the day before. We got absolutely hammered by England in the final. We got our share of the dollars at the end, so it was, but it was just the way it panned out, you know. Like,
yeah.
It was brilliant. So.
Well, I was going to ask, what happened there? Nine players on the field. Were you allowed to bat twice, some of you, or how did it work out?
No. We had Stryker played. He played with a limp.
Yeah.
He hobbled around the field.
Yeah.
John Cummins also, I think he was the other player. He played as a fielder, and he was only going to bat like 11 if he had to bat. So we had a put charger, Stephen Jacks. We made him open. I tell you now, for 2 weeks, Charger was one of the, Charger, he was charging and laughing and joking, and he was full of fun for 2 weeks until on the way to the ground. Dale Bankenstein and Pat Simcox went to him and said to him, "Charger, you're opening the batting today." And obviously against Devin Markham and against Darren Goff. That was the quietest bus trip we had in 2 weeks. He got such a fright when he was told he was going to open the batting. He sat up the whole way to the ground. He never said a word.
Didn't he? How did he go? Did he go okay?
No, he did all right. He got a quick 20-odd, smashed a few, and then got out. But it was funny. He went absolutely. I mean, look, most of the guys hadn't picked up a bat for say 10 years.
Sure.
So I mean, maybe a few of us had a few nets before we went out and that type of thing. I think I was still playing club cricket at that stage, so I was fine. And Dale Bankenstein was still playing county cricket, and Claude Henderson was playing county cricket. So there were a number of guys that were still playing, but the likes of Jack and Caper, Kuzner was all right. They hadn't picked up a bat for a number of years, you know.
Yeah,
it took them a few practices to get into it, you know.
Yeah, sure.
But, I mean, it's always those are always good, you know. Those sort of matches are always really, really good to get the guys together again. And then, but you just, you know, your mind tells you that you can do it, but your body just doesn't allow you to do it anymore. You know, it just doesn't. It doesn't move as well as it should do.
Can I ask you to hold that thought? Don't go away. I'm just going to play a song quickly. I'm going to eat myself a drink. My throat gets so dry. Chatting away. Hang on there, mate. I'm going to come back in a couple of minutes. We're going to Lionel Richie and Ballerina Girl. Hand on the line. Thanks for hanging on, Dave. Yeah, reminiscing with a few funny stories and whatever. And like you're saying, I never got an opportunity. The only game I played really after I retired from first-class cricket was in your benefit game, and all that cost me was the next day I was in the hospital getting my knee sorted out again, another bloody cartilage done or whatever it was. I mean, and I can't... Who did you get to umpire those games, that game? Do you remember?
I can't really remember, right? I think I do recall asking Lou Reitenbach.
Yeah.
And Rudy Kutson. I think those were the two that I requested, and I don't. I think it was them. To be honest, I don't think they turned it down. I mean, both umpires were two true legends of the Eastern Cape. You know, I mean, old Lou was
brilliant.
You know, came back for a long way. He was brilliant. I mean, he was a tough bastard farmer.
Farmer
from outside the area. Used to drive in 150 km. Into town in the early days. I used to drive 150 km to come and umpire a club game for nothing. And then obviously Rudy, the late Rudy, was from Uitenhagen Dispatch, and I actually recall getting to know Rudy quite well when I played rugby for Dispatch in the early days. That was when I got to know Rudy, and that was sort of like that was just when he started getting. His umpiring career. He was living in Dispatch. He used to come down to the rugby club to have a beer, in the evenings and that. And he was one of the guys that ended up getting me into trouble. Actually, I I mean, playing rugby for Dispatch was totally different. I mean, it was before its time. You know, the coach, the Munir Dianhitter, was the strictest person you'll ever meet in your life, and he just didn't he didn't approve of anybody having a beer after practice. You know, and as you know, from a cricket perspective, when we used to have a game of practice and then go out for a beer afterwards before going home or it was, or we'll drink and that. And I recall getting one of my first practices at Dispatch, and the one thing about sport is that it's always so united. You know, the cricket guys want to know what the rugby guys are doing, the rugby guys want to know what the cricket guys are doing, and you know, there's a lot of respect between the sports. It doesn't matter what sport, but all the sports and that. And I remember after practice, I went upstairs, and it was a Monday training session, and it was a fitness session, and afterwards I went upstairs and I went to buy a beer, and Rudy was sitting there, and then Rudy, I sat down next to him, and he said, "Dave, tell me what, how's cricket going, and you know what, this season, we've just finished the season, what do you think?" And we chatted for a while, and you know, what's kept the luck, and you know, all these sort of things. And then the next minute, a couple of the other rugby guys where they came up, and they saw me sitting there, and they also came and they also sat down there, and they started having it. And I said, "You want a beer?" "Yeah." I've never seen a soty like come, and I was buying him more beers, and we were sitting there having a nice time and everything. And the coach walked up, and he just looked at me like this, and he just shook his head. He just like walked, and he walked straight past, and he went into a selection meeting. So the next day, we go back for Tuesday's training session, and before practice, he says, "Guys, listen, I saw something last night. I haven't seen a Dispatch for about 10 years." He says, "I went up to the bar after the training session, and there were a whole lot of players led by our new English Soti, having a few beers there."
Yeah.
So like, I thought, well, you know, what's wrong with that? You know, I don't, you know, what the hell are you? I mean, this is what I do all the time, you know, like you finish practice, you go for a cold drink, and then you chase it down with one or two beers before you go home, you know. So he says, "No, it's, I said to him, is there a problem, Munir?" Because his name was Munir, and he was the headmaster of Dispatch. He was the first team rugby coach at the Dispatch school. He was the first team rugby coach at the club. And he's the only oak that I ever knew Donnie Gerber called Munir as well.
So, oh, really?
So, yeah, I know. Yeah, Donnie was petrified of him. So like I said, "Is there a problem?" And he said, no, it's, we just don't do that at this club." So I said, "Oh, okay, that's fine." He said, "All right, the rest of you around the field five times for a warm-up. And you, Dave, so behind those advertising boards is a couple of big rocks there. Get one of those rocks and run around the field five times with a rock above your head."
Oh, jeez.
So I thought, shit, so that's a bit hard. So I walked across, I looked over, and I picked the smallest one, and I put it above my head, and I started running around the field. And after about the sort of first, second lap, the rock started getting pretty heavy, and I rested it on the back of my head, on my neck area, and I jogged around the field five times. And by the time the fifth time had been finished, I was angry. My neck was raw from the flipping stone rubbing up and down, the rock rubbing up and down my neck. And he walked up to me and he grabbed me by the sideburns like a teacher, and he dragged me across to that where the advertising boards, where the stone had, or the rock had come from, and he and I threw it over there, and he said to me, "I just want to teach you a lesson." So I like looked at him, and he says, "There's no shortcuts to success. Do you hear what I say?" I thought, "Whoa, yeah, I'm in for one hell of a season of rugby here with this guy."
Yeah.
But it was a great lesson that I learned from him, and it ended up well. We actually still talk every now and again now. You know, he's on my rugby group, and we still have the odd chat now and that, and he lives down in Cape Town. So, but it was way before the time. It wasn't the rugby guys, just they were Donnie Haber and Dispatch Rugby. They had got this going long time before. You know, no drinks after practice. So I had to get used to that.
Yeah. Well, you've just jogged my memory. Now, we had two real characters. When I arrived in 87 to join you guys, our fitness coach we had then was, Neil Schultz, am I correct in memory?
Neil Schultz.
Yeah.
Neil Schultz. No pain, no gain.
Oh, God. And he had all those injections. He wasn't he something like a well he thought he was a medic for the army. Was that right or not?
Yeah, he was one of these medics in the police.
That's right. Yes.
So he was a policeman, and then he was a medic in the police force. And when I say a medic, he was. I don't know if he was allowed to give injections.
Oh, jeez.
He used to give us Voltaren B injections.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. I remember that. God, he is a character. He used to run us, and him and Kepler were best friends, and he run us up and down the stadium and everywhere. And then we thought when we got rid of him, who comes along? Clive Wilson arrives from Durban, played a game or two. I remember a night game or two, and then he realised that was not for him. And then he took over as fitness coach. God, and Wolfie's a great guy.
Yeah.
But, golly gosh.
Yeah, they're a great guy.
Yeah, they ran us to death.
Did he finish the over that he played when he bowled 3P?
Well, I'll tell you how that came about. Remember we used to train at the indoor stadium at UPE?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Wolfie arrived. I didn't know him, obviously, and I'd heard, all I'd heard was he had a bit of a problem when he was playing for Natal. He was quite quick and whatever, and then apparently he lost it all of a sudden. Is that correct?
Yeah. No, he lost it completely. That's why I asked, did he ever finish his over? Fine leg and third man were in danger when he was bowling.
Sure. Well, Kepler, and I didn't know, I'd only heard the story, so Kepler said to me, tonight's training at UPE, I said, yeah. He said, can you have a look at this guy? I said, why? I've heard the stories that he couldn't land it on the pitch. Why do you want to play him in a night game, you know, a day-night game, Benson the Hedges? He said, oh, no, I think, you know, you have a look at him and make the call. I thought, oh, God, you know, it's a big call for me to make. I mean, I'm just a professional cricketer. Pay me, do my job, get on with all you guys, and I'm not a selector and all that sort of stuff, but... So I watched him bowl in the indoor net, and I mean, he bowled a reasonable pace. You know, when he got it right, he was, I reckon probably 135, maybe 137. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but he was okay.
No, you're right.
Yeah, and he looked...
No, he was a decent pace.
Yeah, and he maybe 140 when he was playing for Natal, but then he'd lost it, and then he'd come to us. And Kepler said to me after the net session indoors, what do you think? Should we play? I said, gee, mate, I mean, you know, really, it's a bit different in the nets than when you're out in the middle. And if he's had a problem before, and we were drawing crowds in, so you're under a bit of pressure in front of at St George's Park. He said, well, what do you think? I said, how can I make a call? I don't know the guy, you know? I mean, I haven't played in a match with him. I haven't played against him. How do you make a call? So anyway, he played him. Wow. And then all of a sudden he lost it in that game, and he kept looking at me, and I'm saying, hey, I didn't pick him. You guys picked him. Yeah, but we asked you. And I remember him having a go, and I'm saying, boy, oh boy, don't look at me. I'm bowling my nine overs up here, and hopefully I get a wicket or two, and everyone else must do their job. I can't bowl for them, you know. But that was interesting. It's amazing how the fitness coaches and all those memories and all the cursing and swearing and when we were buggered, they were still running us around, but... You actually appreciate it when you're out in the game, when you got to lift a little bit, because you've done all the training, you can actually lift and maybe perform a little bit better than the other sides who didn't train quite as hard.
Yeah, I think, like anything in business today anything, if you put in the hard yards, you know, up front, you know, and you feel that you're better than your opposition, you're already going into that game a lot more confident and you feel that you can win the game, you know. But if you don't put in the yards before, if you don't hit enough balls, if you don't bowl enough balls, and you just arrive and you know your team has prepared better than, or there's a good chance that your team prepared better than you, you're already on the back foot, you know. So, you know, that was one of the philosophies that we had at EPP, was that we always, I mean, there was nothing scientific about our training. I mean, let's face it, with Neil Schultz and Clive Wilson, and I think if you went across the team in those days, you look at yourself, myself, Tim Shaw, Kepler Wessels, Flam Michos, it just had two knee replacements. I've had a knee replacement. Tim, I think, had a knee replacement.
Yeah.
You probably due for one.
Oh yeah. Hop along Cassidy at the moment. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So if you look at the team, I mean, you know, there was nothing scientific about our training. You know, it was up the pavilion, down St. George's Park, upstairs.
Brick makers.
You know, and it was day after day, and it was just hard work. But at the time, it was the only thing that we knew.
Yeah.
And it worked, you know.
Yeah.
It gave us that confidence to, and we were fitter than most. And if you think only took a few years after that where the likes of Free State then picked, you know, they became really strong and they were a really good fit side as well.
Yeah.
Northern Transvaal started getting fitter and training much harder. And then, you know, the other teams sort of caught on, you know, and became and started working harder, you know.
Yeah.
But it did help at that time. But it did bring back some really good memories of the fun that we used to have. I mean, you know, running up the stairs and at St. George's Park. I mean, that was just crazy. I mean, you know, you'd have a sore knee and you'd still be doing it because we didn't know any different, you know. Whereas now you probably go through and have rehab somewhere and do some bicycle training and do your quads and your hammies and that type of thing, you know. So, yeah, it's a lot different. And, I mean, I always say to people, when I injured my knee playing rugby, the following practice I went to, the guy said to me, Stan de Blanche was the EP coach, he said to me, run. And he looked at me and he said, no, you're not right yet. I said, no, I'm not right. Okay. He said, come back next Monday. So the following Monday I arrived, he looked at me, I ran a couple of times. He said, no, come back next Monday. And this went on for like 4 weeks. And then eventually on the fifth week, the other centre of EP, I think it was Gary Lust, got injured. And he said to me, run on the Monday. So I ran a little bit. And he said, oh, it doesn't look too bad. You have to play on this weekend. So I said, okay, I'll play. And then I played with a sort of half a, you know, decent knee, but it was bent. I had that elastoplast. Up from near my quad right down to my, I mean, I was bandaged so much that it was absolutely, I could hardly run properly. I had to get on the field because we had an injury. So, and I was fitter than the one that was injured. So, there was no scientific theories in any of our training. But coming back to the series against in Zimbabwe at the moment, and I think we were talking earlier about it. If you look at the players that are there. You know, we compare it to our, unfortunately at the moment, our rugby's so strong.
Yeah.
I mean, every team that gets named at the moment, you know, you look at the rugby team that gets named. Yesterday I saw the team that's going to be playing up at Mbella this weekend, and I'm like, jeepers, that's a good side. And then you look at the people on the bomb squad, and you look at the reserves, and you think, oh my word, they could all play too, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's what Russie's fortunately been able to muster up, is you've got 30 odd players there, maybe even more, 40 players that really do not make much of a difference who plays. And I'm hoping in a small way, I know it's a little bit more difficult because we do get some other youngsters playing and getting some games in our T20 side, so that they, you know, that when we go to the World Cup T20 following year, we've got a nice nucleus of players, and people are challenged, because I think that is one of the things that we haven't had over the last couple of years, is that we've had the people in the team, but they're not challenged. You know what I mean? And when it gets to those big tournaments, they're not performing. You know, and so I'm hoping that we look at some of the new guys that are in the squad now. You know, that are coming through. I mean, we've still got Markham, we've still got Stubbs, we've still got all these players that are sitting at home, you know, and we've got a team of players out there that, you know, that they're either there on their last chance to show their worth, or they're there to give the side or put it this way, give the side some sort of balance and also give themselves an opportunity of going further in international cricket, you know?
Yeah. I think you're right, Kellers. You know, for me, T20 cricket really is. I know it's great to win and whatever, but that's normally where you enter. Like if you look at David Warner, just talking about it, he started there and everyone said he's got no chance in 50-over cricket and he's got no chance in Test cricket. Well, they got that wrong, didn't they? If you didn't get the chance...
No, they got it horribly wrong.
Yeah, if you don't get a chance to play, you can't show what you can do. And then from there, you can change your game and adapt to the different competitions. So, listen, to me, T20 cricket, I enjoy it. It's exciting. It's great fun. But, you know, it's always been for me a breeding ground. You play your younger players or... your players who, and this will probably sound a bit harsh, and you might even jump on me for saying this, but you don't have to be the best cricketer, in my opinion, to play T20. So you don't need a test match ability to play that game. And I'm happy for the guys because it means that guys with a different ability can actually earn a living out of cricket where they may not go on to 50 over and they may not be good enough with a proper technique to be able to play test match cricket. That's just my opinion. I don't know what you think.
No, I'm there with you. I don't think there's... if you're a really good T20 player, I mean, you take Dale Warner, he's just something that was, he was completely different. I mean, he came in, everybody spoke, in the early days when T20 came in, he smoked it around, and everybody said, no, like you said, no, he's never going to play Test cricket, and he ended up one of the best Test batters in the world, you know, opening batters in the world, but I think he had that ability.
Yeah.
If we look at our present team, the Proteas side at the moment that are over there, all those players, in my view, have got an opportunity. I think the one guy that needs to that's probably got a question mark against his name, and I think he's there. Unfortunately, although I think he's a really good player. But he just hasn't been consistent enough. It's Reza Hendricks up front. He just hasn't been.
Yeah.
And I think he's there on a. Let's see how he gets on now, and if he doesn't pull this one off, you know, we can always bring Markram in to open, and we've got Stubbs as well that can, you know, come into the team. I think Brevis is the guy that should stay there now. I think he's starting to really play good cricket. We've got George Linder. Corbin Bosch has been really, really good.
Yeah,
well.
I like him, mate.
Corbin Bosch, I think, is a good all-rounder. He's got a nice attitude. And then all the other good guys are really there on merit, really. And I mean, there's this young guy, Ruben Herman, that's here. We've got the other brother that plays for the Warriors, Jordan.
Mm.
I think they've brought him into... to possibly give him an opportunity, get a taste of T20 cricket, and I think he's got that ability to go further. And then obviously this young Pretorius kid. I mean, his records are unbelievable.
He looks good, Dave. Hey, he looks really good.
That kid is unbelievable. I mean, to be honest, I don't know if you've sat and watched him bat. I sat and watched him bat the other day, and he didn't look much. I must be honest, he doesn't, you know, he's not the sort of stand-up like Graham Pollock hits through the, you know, left-hander that hits through the covers, and he's got a technique where he just works the ball around. He's got unbelievable eye and hand coordination. He can manipulate. He rotates the strike well. So it must be an absolute joy to bat with him because you're never under pressure, you know, there's always runs flying off his bat, and if he wants to, he can get it over the boundary as well. You know, he's 19 years of age, but, I mean, he's got that strength of a 24, 25, 26-year-old, you know. So I really think there's a bright future for him as well. So, and then the rest of the team are all guys that are, you know, are there and thereabouts, you know. And it's nice to see because we've still got a couple of our players, Rabadas, he's injured. The left arm spinner. We've got Stubbs. We've got Markram. They're all sitting at home, you know, having a rest.
Yeah.
So we're starting to build up a nice sort of a squad of players that can go forward, you know.
Yeah.
The question is, we need that one or two of those to really stand out and become quality players. Not all good players. And then, you know, when you start looking at the other sides, there's always like the standout players that really do well. You know, there's like, give an example. In the New Zealand side, you got Santo, the left-arm spinner. Yeah, he produces results every single game. He bowls well every game. You know, he's one of their standout players. Jimmy Neesham's a good player.
Yeah.
So, there's some really, really good players that in each team, and we need, like Markram did in that Test match final. We need a few of those big players to stand up in every game
and deliver. Yeah.
To become successful, you know, and to become a really successful cricket team. You know.
All right.
So, it's interesting times.
All right, mate. Well, it's 7 minutes past two. We've had a natter, as we always do, and I thought, what are we going to talk about? This and that today, and as usual, stories pop out and whatever. So it's always great to have you on, Kellers. I'd love to have you on again in the next couple of weeks. And thanks for giving up your time. All the listeners really appreciate it. I have recorded it. I've worked how to do it, Kellers. And I'm posting.
Well done.
So it takes us a cut. Yeah, thank you. Technology is not my strength, my friend. But
I know that you couldn't even put on the jukebox when it was in our room when we roommates.
Oh, no. Well, don't tell everyone. Anyway, that's all right. I was busy with other things. Anyway, Kellers, thanks a lot for coming on. Really appreciate it, mate.